This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Former Massey Energy CEO Don Blankenship made his first public campaign appearance in Logan County late last week. Blankenship announced he was running for U.S. Senate in late 2017, just after serving a one-year sentence in prison for willfully conspiring to violate federal mine safety standards. As Dave Mistich reports, the former coal baron, who has often been a controversial figure, met no opposition at his first town hall.
Having never run for office before, Blankenship began his speech by explaining he has been heavily involved in politics behind the scenes.
I am very proud to have begun the resurrection of the Republican Party in 2006 at a time when no one thought a Republican could win, by funding the placement of a Republican on every statewide ballot in West Virginia.
He went on to defend himself in playing any role in the Upper Big Branch disaster, which killed 29 men in April 2010. Blankenship criticized the media for their portrayal of him.
But you can be sure that the Don Blankenship you read about in the Charleston Gazette and that you hear about on WSAZ is not a real person. I don't know who he is. He is the result of liberals listening only to one another. He is the fragment of their imagination. And he is the result of the old saying that if you tell a lie often enough, people will believe it.
Blankenship tried to persuade his audience that they share his views. He criticized the Mine Safety and Health Administration, career politicians, and specifically his would-be opponent in Democrat Joe Manchin.
We should not forget that Joe Manchin supported both Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Do we agree that we should not forget, come Election Day, that Senator Manchin supported Obama and Hillary Clinton? Okay.
After outlining his views on various issues, Blankenship went on to tell a rags-to-riches story about himself, bringing his audience up to the most recent chapter.
Eventually, after the poorhouse, the outhouse, and the bathhouse, I was invited and ate at the private dining table at the White House. And just last year, I lived in California in the big house.
Blankenship explained that his experience in prison gave him further insight into some of the issues facing the country.
Illegal immigration, another issue. As I said earlier, illegal means illegal, and that's not complicated. A wall or something similar does need to be built. I've crossed the Mexican border a number of times. I have another experience that no other politician has. I was a roommate with a coyote. A coyote is a person that helps illegals get across the border at Taft Prison. So I know how you do that. I also know how to stop it.
With no visible or audible opposition among the roughly 100 people in the crowd, a question and answer portion of the town hall wound up serving as a chance for those in attendance to praise Blankenship and to further bash federal mine regulators, the media, and Joe Manchin.
I think the reason you're not getting a lot of questions, you gave us a lot of answers, and we appreciate what you have told us tonight. I know I am. I drove from Bristol over here to see you tonight, and I want to be one of your team.
I appreciate that.
You're the toughest competitor I ever competed against.
And you do. Blankenship will face West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey and Congressman Evan Jenkins in a May 8th Republican primary, just 2 days before he finishes a year of supervised probation. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:49. Variable cloudiness today. There is a chance of rain with highs in the 50s and 60s. Rain tonight with lows in the 40s. A chance of rain on Tuesday with highs in the 40s and 50s. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by the law firm of Jenkins Fenstermaker, PLLC, helping West Virginians and their business entities for more than 90 years. With the federal government shutdown, the Environmental Protection Agency says it has enough funding to stay open another week. But employees across the region's EPA office are preparing to stop work. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk has more.
The head of the union representing EPA workers across the Mid-Atlantic says a shutdown is bad for the environment and for the bulk of the region's employees.
We will not be able to work. And this is very frustrating because projects stop. Enforcement actions stop.
Gary Morton said Friday that a shutdown would put more than 600 of the region's 700 employees out of a job. It would mean a halt to monitoring air and water pollution, and he says it would affect state and community agencies that receive federal money to run programs from environmental education to cleaning up contaminated industrial sites. During shutdowns, a skeleton crew of EPA staff keeps working to respond to emergencies like an oil spill. In the past, Congress has eventually paid employees who were forced to stay home, but Morton says going without pay can be tough on workers living paycheck to paycheck. Amy Sisk, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
2017 was the year of endless Obamacare debates. 2018 could be the year we see the effects for people who need health care the most. As part of the series One Year Under Trump, Mary Meehan reports some Ohio Valley health officials are concerned that vulnerable patients could lose access to health care.
About halfway through his first year in office, President Donald Trump used a White House Rose Garden event to declare Obamacare dead.
This is, make no mistake, this is a repeal and a replace of Obamacare. Make no mistake about it.
But reports of Obamacare's demise were premature. The bill he was referring to was the American Health Care Act. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office found 23 million people would become uninsured under that plan. Ultimately, Republicans couldn't pass the bill, and other repeal efforts also failed.
And it has proven remarkably persistent.
That's Simon Hayter, an assistant professor in political science at West Virginia University, who specializes in health policy. The Affordable Care Act is still alive, and despite the chaotic politics, people are still enrolling. Enrollment dipped slightly in West Virginia and Ohio last year, but went up in Kentucky. But Hayter says the law has been changed, and more changes are coming that could make Medicaid very different from state to state.
We're going to get states, we already have states, but it's going to be very much where states have, you know, a low uninsurance rate, 2%, 4%, 5%, you know, like Massachusetts and perhaps Oregon, and then states like Texas and Alabama, we have 20-25% uninsured.
Kentucky, one of the unhealthiest states in the nation, is the first requiring Medicaid recipients to devote 20 hours a week to work, volunteering, or school. Hayter says that could make it harder for those in poor, rural areas to keep coverage, and gaps between states will grow.
The question then really comes, when is a discrepancy between two states in the same country too large?
That has implications for rural hospitals. Maggie Elawani is the Vice President of Government Affairs and Health Policy for the National Rural Health Association. Because they serve a poor population dependent on Medicaid, any changes in that program can be financially devastating for rural hospitals. Losing them, she says, creates health deserts populated by the elderly, chronically ill, and the poor. That has real implications as the closest health care moves farther away.
And there's been so many cases documented where patients just haven't lived because their transport times were too long.
Elawani says rural hospitals can also make up to 20% of a local economy. Losing a hospital often leads to other businesses closing. Property values can even go down.
It's really a nail in the coffin on the whole economic vitality of the community.
That's something Dr. Van Breeding worries about. He works at Mountain Comprehensive Care, a federally qualified health center serving patients in 5 eastern Kentucky counties. Breeding aired his concerns at a health panel in Whitesburg. He well knows how bad health is in the region.
High levels of opioid use, high levels of addictive babies born. So you name it, we have it.
But he says access to Medicaid, which Kentucky expanded under Obamacare, is making a difference. Children are getting preventative vaccinations. Chronic conditions are being treated before they become acute. He says his data show the needle moving in a positive direction.
When people or politicians try to manipulate the numbers, they're lying.
Numbers likely in 2018 to reflect the true impact of health policy on people in the Ohio Valley. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Mary Meehan in Richmond, Kentucky.
The Ohio Valley Resource is made possible by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our news director is Jesse Wright. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.